For those of you who have been in the past or have been following along, we've been talking about lab-grown meat. That means, you know, you take the stem cells, you take cells, and you use them as stem cells, you engineer them to grow into muscles. You can also engineer them with fat in some ways. I'll find out more about that soon, hopefully. And it's grown in a medium, and we've discussed already the question of whether or not it should be just not even considered meat at all to begin with, because once it's removed from the animal and grown as cells, maybe it's completely a different material now. That seems to be the direction that Rabbi Schachter went in. Most don't go in that direction. We talked about, what did we talk about? We talked about, what was the second thing? What was the second thing we talked about? Right, that was the first thing we talked about. We compared it to the stories in the Gemara, Midrashim, and the Rishonim, the Achronim, that talk about miraculously appearing meat that's made using Sefer Yetzirah, that there is ample discussion about that in the sources, and there was an attempt to try to compare it. That's what to compare that to this. But Rabbi Bleich and many others don't feel that it's a good comparison because this is all natural. Everything is happening is based on science. It's nothing miraculous about it. I'm now blanking on the second topic, the second section that we talked about.
The question of what the medium is, right?
Was that what it was? No, I don't think we did that. Yeah, we're going to do that a little bit tonight.
This is what the medium is. Is that allowed or what?
We started to talk about it, but
the cells come from a kosher animal or not?
Yeah, well, we did touch on that. No, I'm just trying to remember the actual topic that I can't remember. I know that last time we talked about Hayotze min atame tame yotze min atar tahor. Oh, you know what? I know what we talked about. I'm just misreading number four. Hayotze min atame tame and Hayotze min atar tahor, which means that if a kosher, anything that comes out of a kosher animal is kosher. Anything that comes out of a tame animal is tame. That's just the way it is. And so the Gemara discusses, it does, there's nothing you can do about it. The Gemara discusses a pig coming out of a cow and a cow coming out of a pig. And a pig that comes out of a cow is a kosher pig. And a cow that comes out of a pig is a non-kosher cow. So the Gemara says, okay, how does it happen? We don't know. It could be that it's not, it never happened. It could be that it's trying to make a point. I don't know. We don't really know. But it makes sense to Shulchan Aruch, which would mean if you believe that this was considered in that category of Yotze Min HaTamei Tamei, and if the animal was not kosher, then the cells that come from the animal would also not be kosher, although this was debatable. We went from there and we talked about... Oh, no, I am blanking. We talked about different kinds of Yotze, and I'm misremembering now which were the two different kinds of Yotze. It was important, but I can't remember. Okay, fine. That's what we talked about. Now, tonight, we're going to talk about something more important, which is going to really get into the, use the same pun, meat and potatoes, of the technology over here. Because there is something unique about this technology, and the topic that we're going to talk about at first is Zev Zeh Goreim. I don't know how much of this we're going to get to. I've only printed out part of what was the next section, the part that we can, in theory, get to. This is called Zev Zeh Goreim, this and that. Okay, now what does that mean, Zev Zeh Goreim? So technically, semantically, what it means is that sometimes you can have two things that cause one result. Over here, what are the two things that are causing the one result? On the one hand, there's the cells, and on the other hand, there's the medium. Neither of them alone can give you the final product. If you leave the stem cells alone, they won't grow. If you leave the medium alone, it won't grow. So it's only when they are together, they interact, and they create something new. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says as follows. If a field has been manured with the manure derived from an idolatrous source, or a cow has been fattened on beans derived from an idolatrous source. So somehow you got manure that came from an Avodah Zarah. You know, a cow that was worshipped by Indians, right, in India, and then the feces that come out of it is used to fertilize a field. Okay, so what are the products that come from a field, from that field? So one Tana decides that the field may be sown and the cow slaughtered, while another decides that the field must lie fallow and the cow grow lean. So there's a machlokas over here. Can you actually use the product of this kind of confluence of forces? Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, the halacha agrees with Rabbi Yossi, namely that it's mutter. Zev is a gorim.
What does it mean the cow goes lean?
If the cow got fat from the beans from the idolatrous source.
Oh, you just let it go. You let it die. No, it means you let it die.
It means you can't.
You don't feed it anymore. You don't do anything with it. You just let it die.
I mean,
same thing as let the land lie flat. You can't eat it. The, the question is whether or not you're allowed to eat it.
Right, one time, what it says. I mean, sorry, what do you mean? I'm saying in terms of if you say it's not allowed, you say it's not allowed. Grolin, I would think it means it got fat through the beans.
Grolin is an English translation of the phrase mista'ev, which just means you let it starve.
Oh, okay.
You let it starve.
Starve?
Yeah.
Starve.
You don't you let it go. You let it feed itself. Yeah. You don't feed it.
Means you don't starve it, but it grazes or whatever.
You let it feed by itself. You don't feed it. You don't have anything to do with it because it's a avodah zarah. That's why. But the halacha over here is lehakel, right? That we do allow it to be slaughtered. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Mutar lita tachata ashera yirakot." You're allowed to plant underneath the ashera tree. The ashera tree is a tree that's used for avodah zarah. It is a symbol of avodah zarah. And the Shulchan Aruch says you are allowed to plant underneath it. Bein bimot hachama shehem tzrichim letzel bein bimot hagishamim b'nei shetzel ha'ashera shehu asur im hakarka she'ena ne'aseret gormim l'rakot elu lismach. Because what happens? the combination of the tree and things that are not asur, namely the ground or the sun or the shade, right? All these things that are not asur are combining to create the tzmicha, combining to create the vegetation that comes out. V'chol shadavar isur. V'davar mutar, gormin lo, harei ze mutar b'kol makom. Anytime you have zev is a gorim, and one of the gormim is mutar, then the thing that's asur becomes irrelevant. L'vichach, sadeh shezavla bezev shel avodas kachavim, mutar lizra'a ota. That's exactly what we read in the Gemara. If you have a field that is fertilized by avodah zarah, mutar. U'para shepitm b'karshini avodas kachavim, ti'achel, v'chen k'yotze bezeh. Okay? Shulchan Aruch says that if you have zev as a gorim, as long as one of the materials is mutar, it's mutar. Okay? Enter Rabbi Bleich, and he says as follows. Cultured meat derived from stem cells of non-kosher origin. Okay, so imagine you have pig stem cells. Since it is not the product of natural development of the animal, is not yotze, and hence is not automatically acquired the identity of the animal from which the stem cell was derived. This goes back to what we were talking about previously. You could say that it doesn't automatically become pig. You don't consider it pig necessarily. The principle of identity earlier described as yotze 1 is limited to the growth and development of a living organism and is the basis of an identity as a member of a particular species. Meat cultivated in a laboratory is akin to milk produced by an animal. The milk of a non-kosher animal has the species identity of an animal from which it emerges. Okay, so now he's saying that the meat that you would cultivate there would become to which it causes rise. Therefore, the cultured meat cells are not produced by a living animal whose identity can be.
It's not kosher, just like meat.
Yeah, he is.
Milk from a non-kosher animal.
Meat cultured. The original stem cell is indeed the cause of the newly developed cells to which it gives rise. However, the cultured meat cells are not produced by a living animal whose identity can be transmitted in the manner of yotze. The cultured meat cells are indeed produced by a forbidden substance, the non-kosher stem cell. So there's no doubt that they're not kosher, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are.
It's a second level derivative already.
Right. So then he goes on to the next underlying part. He says, were the non-kosher stem cells the sole cause, the cultured meat cells would be forbidden as yotze too. Meaning, even if we didn't categorize, this goes back to what we were talking about last time. We differentiated, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik differentiated between yotze 1 and yotze 2. He didn't use those terms, but Rabbi Bleich did. What's the difference? Yotze 1 is if you take a piece of meat, like off of a live animal, that is yotze 1. Or if the pig that comes out of a cow or the cow that comes out of a pig, that's yotze 1. Okay, because it's part of the body of the animal and it comes out. Contrast that with an egg, okay, that would come out of an animal, or milk that comes out of the animal, that's in a different category. It's asur. Milk that comes out of a camel is asur. You're not allowed to drink it. But it's not camel.
It's only asur because of yotze mutar.
Right. It's not camel.
Why does it matter that it's not camel?
It does matter, first of all, in terms of the punishment. It matters. We saw that you don't get malchus for drinking cow milk.
So what is the punishment for drinking cow milk?
There, malchus mardus. It's asur, and you get a separate set of just rabbinic lashes. It's asur. But it's what he calls yotze too. It's just of a different category. It doesn't have the identity of the animal that it came from. So again, were the non-kosher stem cell the sole cause, the cultured meat cells would be forbidden as Yotzei too. In other words, he's assuming that the cultured meat cells are not identical with the original animal. They are more like milk or like eggs. But those meat cells are the resultant effect of dual causes, the stem cell and the nutrients introduced into the petri dish in order to make cell division possible. Moreover, the nutrients do not function simply as catalysts that are not present in the effect. Rather, the nutrients are physically integrated into the newly produced cells. It therefore follows that the cultured meat is the product of Zeva Zagorim and hence permissible. Assuming that the media, assuming that the rest of the nutrients in the petri dish were kosher, okay, assuming that, then when it helps grow the stem cells, that would be a good example of ze vze gorim. It's the same as fertilizing a field, right?
In ze vze gorim, does that assume that there are two parts? What if there are two parts that are gorimim?
Good question.
One part.
I think as long as it was necessary, I think you would say it would still be a gorim. I think the operative part here is gorim. Meaning it's caused. It cannot happen without this ingredient.
So no matter how many parts are gormim, as long as one of them is...
It would seem. Okay. The conclusion, now he says this is important. By the way, what he's saying is, according to this, if you had pig cells and you grew it in a kosher medium, that would be kosher. Because of Zev Zagorim. Even if you acknowledge that the pig cells were pig, and that they were asur on their own.
Because he said they're not pig.
Even if you did.
No, because the reason why he said the only reason why it was is because Yotzei 2, but it was Yotzei 1.
Yeah.
If it was pig, then it would then be different. It would be Zev Zagorim. As in this.
You might be right, because in that case, because it would be if it was Yotzei 1, then whatever grew would be pig. You're right. Whatever. I think I understand what you're saying is, if there was Yotzei 1, then even with the nutrients, it would just remain pig.
It could be pig or it could be Yotzei 2, but it's not.
No, I think what you're saying is absolutely right, and is in line with what we were saying last time. If we assumed that the stels were Yotzei 1, that they were pig, right? Then even if you had the petri dish stuff, it wouldn't matter, because even if it was gorim, it wouldn't matter, because at the end you'd have a pig in front of you.
It's like a pig, like if you feed a little pig grass,
yeah, you'd have a pig in front of you. Yeah, so it wouldn't matter that it was that it was Zeva Zagorim, because you'd have pig, and you can't eat pig. The key over here is that it's not pig; it's just asur. It's just a vague isur, no flavor, just asur. Right. And therefore, it can be, I don't want to use the word nullified because it's the wrong term over here, but it can be balanced by that. What do you mean?
How do we hold?
I don't know, understand your question.
We haven't figured it out yet.
Right now, we're definitely talking on a theoretical level.
We haven't figured it out?
In this room.
We haven't both. Figured it out?
No, both. But
so we don't know how...
No, no. Look, there are different opinions. What we're trying to analyze is the subject itself. Rabbi Blech has offered us a way of analyzing it, which we can follow to its logical conclusion. We'd have to maybe pick whether it's Yotzei 1, whether it's Yotzei 2, whether we buy the whole thing to begin with. It's pretty convincing in terms of this one point. What he would be suggesting is
Are you saying that we decide on the halakha, we ourselves?
What, in this room? No, I'm not saying that. But I would like us to enter the Beit Midrash and get involved in the discussion.
Absolutely, but what's halakha?
Again,
today.
It is, for the most part, still not... it's not stable. It's not stable. No, we will see that many rabbis have already made their decisions.
Huh?
Many rabbis have already made their decisions, but it's
are.
Not yet stable completely.
Well, so the science hasn't been decided.
Don't be you can tell.
No, I'm telling you that there's too many, the chips have not yet fallen. Because first of all, listen to what Rabbi Eichel just said. He just said, okay, if the Petri dish was kosher, then it's okay. If it's not, then it's not okay. But what is the reality?
Here we're dealing with pig cells. With cow cells, with normal cow meat.
Good.
That's kosher,
okay, so I can say this now with pretty much confidence. Okay, and I said at the beginning, if you had shechted cow cells, in other words, if you took cells from a shechted cow, and you grew it in a kosher medium,
yes.
Everybody would say that it was kosher, and if you would want to be safe, you'd say it's meat. Okay?
And what if you withdrew?
All of those things are debatable, though. I'm just saying that's what the OU is going to say.
Would that be different?
In 5 years, when this is all said and done, that is what the OU will say. Whether that's what Israel will say, I'm not yet completely sure. I think it's likely, But that's definitely what the OU will say. Rabbi Ganak basically said as much already.
Well, it needs to be cells from a shechted cow.
Well, if it's not cells from a shechted cow, then it's Eber Minachai.
Which means if I withdrew cells with a syringe, say.
Which is what they do now, by the way. That's why I say this stuff is not stable yet, because at the moment they take it from live animals.
Is that Eber Minachai? If you're doing a blood test on a cow to check its fertility levels, nutrients, whatever else, a simple blood test. Right, that would be Eber Minachai.
What do you want to do with the blood? It's awesome.
No.
You can't drink blood.
Not to drink, not to eat. Right.
Right.
But if you're performing Eber Minachai, isn't just about eating it. I can't chop it up for fun either.
What? You can't what?
You can do whatever you want with Eber Minachai except eat it. You can get enough from Eber Minachai. You can get enough from Eber Minachai. Sure you can.
That's Eber Minachai.
There's no reason you can't get it.
Other than it's
not animals. You can get it from a pig.
You shouldn't intentionally cut animals.
Well, I mean, if there was some reason for it, then you could do it.
Well, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
Even if there was Eber Minachai, you could do it. But it's not.
That's why I say it. I'm not trying to be. I'm not trying to obfuscate the issue. I'm just saying things have not really settled yet.
It's theoretical, so it's not. They haven't. Really
it's somewhere in between theoretical and already.
$65,000 steaks. Like they don't have to.
They're getting cheaper. No, they're already cheaper.
$2,000.
But the question is, where are these coming from? That was probably the impossible burger. That was vegetarian, probably.
Yeah.
Vegetarian is already out. Vegetarian already. Beyond and Impossible, those are already on the market. They're being sold retail.
They showed you a picture.
They're being sold in Burger King. I don't know.
No, they showed you on the news. Daniel, they showed you.
You had it? Was it good?
Guys.
Which one did you have? The Impossible or the Beyond?
Honestly, I don't know.
Guys, they showed you on Sheva Tochnit called Sheva Vachetzi on TV on. McDonald's on the fake burgers. And the guy says, you can't tell the fake burger is really meat or not meat.
All right, so...
It tastes like meat.
So good. So let's finish, though. So he says, this conclusion is correct, in the next paragraph, only if the nutrients are derived from kosher sources. The recently produced burger... Now, he's writing this in 2013. This is the $325,000 burger. Right, so things have changed since then. I want to find out how much have they changed. The recently produced burger was the product of non-kosher stem cells that were placed in a nutritional medium consisting of cow serum derived from cows that had not been rendered kosher by means of ritual slaughter. In other words, both the meat and the medium were not kosher. The meat was taken from a cow that wasn't yet shechted, and the medium was taken from cows that also were not yet shechted. With regard to those stem cells, both causes, the nutrients as well as the stem cells, were not kosher. Moreover, serum, which is essentially blood, here's where things get a little bit tricky. Even if derived from a kosher slaughtered cow is non-kosher, and hence the principle of Zevizagorim would not apply to any stem cell burger for which animal serum is used as a nutritional medium. Here's something ironic, though, because, I mean, I get that blood's not kosher, but, you know, that's what's in cows. So it's kind of funny to say that, okay, if you grow cow meat in a blood medium, it won't be kosher because blood's not kosher. It just sounds odd. I understand what he's saying. It just sounds odd.
At the end of the day, you're not eating blood, you're eating a steak.
No, right, that's right. That's how cows grow. I mean, they grow in blood.
Right, but at the end of the day, what you eat in the end of it is a steak. So just like a steak from a cow.
We have to figure out...
Even though the blood was there.
We have to figure out how we define the process of the growth of these cells. Is it growing like a cow grows? Or is it this artificial growth, in which case we treat it more like cooking or something like that?
In which case, that's why it's now...
Exactly. And, you know, if you thought of it as growth of a cow, then maybe the blood would be okay in some way. Because now, on the other hand, based on Rabbi Bleich, what he's saying, it would seem that he would say that as long as the cow was kosher, then it would even matter if he used blood, because Zevizagorim, one of them, is kosher.
Well, no. He sets himself up, I guess, for the next point, because he talks about the nutrients do not function simply as catalyst, which is your next.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to Dover Mabit. Yeah.
He's already setting it up.
So he says, nevertheless, with further scientific advances, the time may come when kosher nutrients might effectively be used in culturing meat cells. At such time, the principle of Zevizagorim would become applicable even to non-kosher meat. Remember, that's what he's saying. He's saying even to non-kosher meat, that would become applicable.
Is he saying that this product of this of this process, is it Basari or is it Parav?
He hasn't said anything about it yet.
Can we take a stem cell from a living animal?
That's what they do now.
And if it is, then it's automatically not kosher? It has to be shechted?
If the stem cell itself is, according to most authorities, not kosher. But it may be irrelevant if what Rabbi Bleich is saying is true, that they use a kosher medium, then it wouldn't matter. Now, Davar HaMa'amid. So here's the next issue.
But what, are you just basing the idea of a kosher medium on what? That if you use an unkosher something, put it in a kosher medium and grow it there? Is that derived from? From the field?
Yeah, from the field. Yeah.
From the field?
From the field.
That's
and from the cow, and from feeding a cow.
That's fertilized with manure from
an idolatrous source.
Idolatrous source.
Right. And from feeding the cow.
But it's not accepted that that is good.
That is good. It is absolutely accepted that that is good. We read the Shulchan Aruch said it explicitly.
That's fine.
The Shulchan Aruch said that.
Okay. So that's where we derive that from. Okay.
Right.
That's interesting.
First of all, we do have Shechter's side. There's a concept called Davar HaMa'amid, which we're most familiar with from cheese, as we're going to see. But first, we'll read what Rav Shechter says. Ubedavar HaMa'amid nechlekua poskim betamid emilta de'enu mitbatel. Actually, you know what? Let's read first Rabbi Bleich's point. Let's read that first, so we get some context. One can endeavor to arrive at a general definition only by examining examples of ingredients labeled as belonging to that category. A commonplace example is the small quantity of rennet employed in the process of turning milk into cheese. Without additions of the enzymes present in rennet, milk would not become cheese. Those enzymes cause casein proteins present in milk to coagulate. The milk then curdles and turns into cheese. Cheese possesses distinctive characteristics quite different from those of milk. He's describing the process of cheese. Since those characteristics are visible and attributable to the rennet, the presence of rennet is deemed to be perceived in all portions of the cheese. Accordingly, non-kosher rennet, rennet, for the most part, almost always comes from animals. It comes from meat, right? It's derived from meat. So if you have non-kosher rennet, they came from a non-kosher animal, which is where most rennet comes from.
Cheese is also a kosher animal.
That's true. But what are we doing? How are we making the cheese? You take milk, which comes from a kosher cow,
yes,
and then you add these enzymes that come from a non-kosher animal, because that's where most rennet comes from. So accordingly, non-kosher rennet is not subject to nullification, regardless of how small the quantity of rennet used for the purposes may be. Here, because the rennet, this is kind of like an ultimate, a more extreme form of Zev Zagorim, this is even more. This is like the Davar HaMa'amid.
The ultimate.
It causes a change in the original
state,
in the original substance, which is what we want. The change is what's essential. And it's considered that once it does that, though, even if you don't taste rennet, it permeates the entire original substance. Normally, in halakha, we talk about taste, right? So, and if there's no taste, then it's batel. Now, do you taste rennet in cheese? Do you taste, the camel in cheese? Of course not. You don't taste it.
But I don't know what rennet tastes like. Maybe.
You have no idea. Do you ever eat some cheese and say, oh, it tastes like chicken? No. But because of this concept of Davar HaMa'amid, because it causes this essential change in the original substance, it's not batel. That's what Rav Shechter writes about on the right side.
So you're saying that we can only use cheese that has rennet from the kosher animal?
Yeah.
Is that what
he's
saying?
No.
Is that what we just read?
We don't have kosher animal. What
do we do? Or we use rennet from something else. We use it from plant-based rennet.
But we
mostly use plant-based rennet.
Plant-based rennet?
Yeah. So we usually use.
That's why you need a hashgacha on cheese.
Right. Of course. Absolutely. Yeah, that's why cheese is more chamor than milk, because milk, if you just leave it, nothing happens. There's nothing non-kosher about milk as long as they just take it from a cow. It's fine. But the cheese, there's something non-kosher there. Ubedavar HaMa'amid, on the right side, so Ubedavar HaMa'amid nechleku aposkim betamid demilta deinu mit batel. Rav Shechter says, what is the reason why Davar HaMa'amid doesn't become batel? Im no marshe kemo bi yisur anotein tam beheter machar shetam onir gash. If you say it's because of the same reason that something that you, it's that the taste remains, that's why it's asur. Lefichach chashiv kinikar ha'isur veinu mitbatel. Therefore, since it remains, it's as if you can still see the isur in there. So that's why it's not batel. Hachinami bose pulat ha'amada chashuv v'mashu shel isur kinikar. Then even a tiny, tiny little bit of the rennet, let's say, in this case, will be considered nikar, Okay, nikar. It's as if you can see it. Asher midor abaran. Ulfi chachinu mitbatel. Ulfi ze behusar kol yisro legamrei me'amachal she'asah bapulat ha'amada yesh lomer di'yemutar dumid behusar kol adam me'ashuban shel basar yidei treigel. Says if you say it that way, if the point is that the rennet, because you see its effects, it's as if you can see it, even if you can't, then one could argue that if you had a way, after the whole thing became cheese, if you had a way of effectively removing on a cellular level, I don't know on a cellular level, but on a practical level, removing any trace of the remaining rennet from the cheese, then what would we say? That would be mutar.
Sounds good.
If the point is that if you can see the effect of the rennet, then it means that the rennet doesn't become batel, well, that's only true insofar as there's still rennet in the substance. But if you remove the rennet from the substance, there's nothing to be mevatel. I don't care. It's just not there anymore.
When you say see, you're not equating that with taste, right? You're saying literally see.
No. Again, he's saying we have a rule of Davar Ma'amid. And Davar Ma'amid says that as long as something caused a fundamental change in the substance, even if it was a tiny little bit that would normally be batel, one in a thousand, that's all you need to completely change the whole thing, it would still not be batel. So he says, why is it not batel? One could say it's not batel because as long as you can see the change, it's in front of your eyes, it's cheese, then you can never say that, oh, it's batel. Because it's right in front of your eyes. You can see that there is rennet in there. You know there's rennet in there because you can see the change. But if that's the only reason, then one could argue that if I take the rennet out, with a centrifuge or something like that, even after the change has occurred, then it would be mutar, because there's no rennet in there anymore. Only the change that it caused.
Change, yeah.
But it doesn't matter. The change that it caused is not asur. It's the rennet that's asur.
You mean
it
changed the taste of it?
No. Even if it changed the taste, it changed its substance. But it doesn't matter, because this the asur substance is not in there anymore. That's what he would say. That's one sad.
That's well theoretical, of course.
Oh, denema. Oh, denema, shamachal b'matzavo amuchodashu amad bo mikoach hadavar ha'asur chashiv kilu yotzi min asur. But if you say, no, that's not how it works. What happens is that once the thing is fundamentally changed, b'koach hadavar, from the strength of the rennet, chashiv kilu hu yotzi min asur. Now the new substance is considered yotzei min ha'asur. And now, no matter what you do to it, it will always be asur, because the whole chefza becomes asur.
This is all theoretical, actually, right? I don't know if there is a way to remove rennet from cheese.
I don't know, but it always has nafkaminas. V'dino kechalav behema trefa ubeitza oftamei. Fiza afilu im nasir mikana isur ikari adayin yishar. He finishes the logic. He says even if you were to take it out, it would still be asur. Now, that Rav Poskim lahakel bazeh. Most Poskim are makel on this. That even once the thing is taken out, that it would not be asur anymore. The big chiddush, that if you were to manage to take it out, it would not be asur.
Is there anything that we can practically say actually happens today that we can take out the asur part?
I mean, first of all, why would you think that we would not be able to take out the rennet?
I'm not saying we can't. I'm saying I never heard of it. I'm not a maven on these things.
Well, yeah, enzymes are reusable. And this is literally enzymes.
And you're saying the enzymes can be removed?
By definition, the enzyme is reusable.
And it can be removed?
Yes.
When you say reusable, you mean remove it and reuse it.
It doesn't get used up. When they just cause the reaction to happen, and then you can find a way to remove it.
The third product that would dissolve the rennet.
Okay.
That would literally...
I don't know if Newton allows that, but okay, yeah. I mean, to dissolve something doesn't mean that it's gone. It just means that it's...
Maybe
molecular level it would break it up.
Yeah,
that's an interesting idea.
On a molecular level. Then you're saying
maybe.
I could eat the cheese, I could eat the...
That's a really fascinating... It's a really fascinating question, which goes... That's what we talked about last time. Microscopic stuff. That's what we talked about. We talked about microscopic, you can still consider it a meat once it gets to the microscopic level. That's what we talked about last time, which gets to your point. You can ask this question with basar b'chalav. What happens if you have, it's a great question. What happens if you have, a cheeseburger, not cheeseburger, forget cheeseburger, soup, you know, soup that that some milk fell into the soup. Okay? And then someone invented some kind of serum that you could just drop into the soup and it dissolves all milk molecules. What does it do? It breaks them up so that they become, I don't know, whatever milk is made out of, it just becomes separated.
And where does it go?
It doesn't matter where it goes. It stays in the soup, but it's no longer milk. But it's no longer milk. It's no longer milk because it's... It's a fascinating question.
Based on what you're saying.
It's a fascinating question, and I guess you could argue that at the very least, it would remove the taste of milk from the mixture. And now you'd have a really complicated situation because of Hanan, right? Because once you have Hanan, it doesn't even matter if you remove the taste of milk. This is a very interesting question. It's a very, very interesting question. Hanan means chatichanas et nevela. It's kind of what we're talking about over here. In most of kashrus, right, ignoring basar b'chalav, right, if you had soup and then some pork fell in, as long as you took all the pork out, it would be mutar. Hanan for everything? I think if you manage to really... you know, it's been a few years, so I don't remember exactly. I don't remember exactly, but I think if you would get it, the whole thing out. I can't remember now, but let's say in theory, if you got the whole thing out, let's say you didn't say Hanan. If you didn't say Hanan, then if you got all the Yisur out, then it would be Mutar again. Right? Which makes sense. In Basar B'Chalev, it doesn't work like that. That's a big Chiddush. In Basar B'Chalev, once you have the interaction, both the Basar and the Chalav are now Asur. They're just Asur. It doesn't matter whether you extract them one from the other. And so it could be that even if you were to break it up, it wouldn't matter. The meat would stay Basar B'Chalev once it gets that status. But okay. It's a great question. That's a really, really interesting point. What happens if you broke up the Asur? You'd have to probably examine it. Let's look at Rabbi Bleich's conclusion over here with Davar HaMamid. Each of the ingredients described in halachic literature as Davar HaMamid appears to serve as a catalyst affecting perceivable chemical and physical changes. Stem cells employed for the production of cultured meat seem to function in an analogous manner. It is a good analog. The stem cells interact with nutrients that cause the cell to divide. Each of those cells again divides and so on in Syria. The original cells constitute only... And he's flipping the script, by the way, here. Now, he's saying maybe we should ignore the cells. The original cells constitute only an infinitesimal portion of the resultant corpus of cells, but since each of the cells produced is a physical replica of the original cell, the presence of the original cell is readily deduced on the basis of visual phenomena. Accordingly, it would seem that if the original cell is non-kosher, it does not become nullified, and the resultant laboratory-produced meat must be non-kosher as well. He says, ignore Davar HaMamid over here, because... The fact that the cell was tiny at the beginning doesn't matter because it's getting bigger. It itself is getting bigger. You're not going to call it like, okay, there was an original cell, and then there were these other cells that came and they're not the same. No, come on. They're the same cell. Some authorities... Yeah.
So I was thinking when we were discussing, you know, how do people know, you know, Mara Ayin and all this kind of stuff, if you could make these burgers, I don't know, bright green, yeah? if you can change the fat content, and if you can change the nutritional values and whatever else, so you basically engineered it, you bioengineered it, so. You're using a natural process, now you're making it also shine green in the dark.
Okay. Right?
So no one's under any illusion that this is meat, you can now eat this or whatever.
And nobody's going to eat it.
Well, okay, forget the color, right? So you make it, okay, color aside. But now you know that this is the product of a such a process. Now, this case where, yes, on the one hand, It is the same cell, or it's based on a certain cell where we're replicating it. On the other hand, you've engineered it. It's different. So, it's visually different from what you would have taken out from the cow in the first place.
But it's still meat. I mean,
you've done enough changes to it that it doesn't look the same. It doesn't necessarily have the same values.
So,
you're basically hijacking the production process, the natural
I get it.
Process, and you're changing. If you're changing enough of what causes us to think that it's meat.
What is this? Is this like if you change, you know, if you take all the planks out of a ship, is it still a boat? Argonauts. Jason and the Argonauts.
No,
yeah.
Someone knows.
It's Jason and the Argonauts. Look it up. Let's see what he says. He says, accordingly, I'm in the second underlying part, if the cultured meat is the taste and flavor of the original stem cell, all would agree that such laboratory-produced meat is forbidden. If, however, the original stem cells are derived from a kosher animal and the nutrient medium is also composed of kosher ingredients, the resulting meat would certainly be kosher. More so, you know, if both the animal is not kosher and it still has the taste of a non-kosher animal, which is what would happen, that is what would happen, then it would not be kosher. If they would both be kosher, then good. Moreover, since the original cell had been nullified, the resultant meat would be pyrev as well.
Wait, so how can you qualify before what you said that it's not nullified during the cell? Should have been underlined, other substances. He's going on the sum authorities, which you didn't underline.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Because he said they maintain that other substances in the nature of Dover Mamid become nullified provided that the taste or flavor of the prohibited Dover Mamid cannot be detected. By the way, over here, it's an amazing thing. He's calling the cells Dover Hamamid, which is kind of counterintuitive.
On a previous page, he implied...
I mean, it is the object. It's Dover Hamamid is something that you would add to it.
So on the previous page, he implied that the medium was the catalyst.
That was Zev Zagorim, I think, right?
You mean by that. He said the nutrients do not function simply as catalysts, implies that they are, at very least, they are catalysts.
Right.
Which is scientifically what I would thought they were.
No. He called the stem cells.
He's calling them, but on the previous page, he called the medium the catalyst.
In the Zev Zagorian part, yeah, okay, yeah, I hear you.
But I think that's what he is.
Now I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this again. He's saying that the taste and the flavor of the original stem cells, if it had the same taste, then the meat would be forbidden, even according to those some authorities. There are some authorities that maintain that in a Dabra Amamid, as long as it doesn't have the taste, the original taste, then it's mutar. Fine. But he's saying even according to them, as long as it has the same taste, it would be asur. And it would be pyrev, they would say.
He's making chakira between two different Dabra Amamid. There's Dabra Amamid for Takrovis of Avodah Zarah. That are not subject to notification.
Right. But this is only according to some of the authorities.
And then according to that, then if it was from a kosher animal, it'll be okay.
The whole thing seems to me to be a little bit pointless, because if the only way out of Dover Amamid is it doesn't have the same taste, it's meat. It's going to have the taste of meat. That's the point of it. If it doesn't have the taste of meat, they won't be able to sell it. So it seems very strange to even discuss it. Unless they wanted to sell
and the original stem cells
tasteless
have
meat.
A taste. I mean, like, stem cells don't have taste.
They taste like meat. That's what the taste is. The taste is meat.
But how do you know they don't have a taste?
How can a stem
cell? Have you tasted a stem cell?
Stem cell.
How do you know it doesn't have a taste?
Well, I mean, it's
if
marrow.
If you take a single stem cell, right?
Yes.
Does it have any taste? It's microscopic.
It probably doesn't, but I don't buy that because, you know, if you take a single cell of milk, it also doesn't taste like milk.
No, but a stem cell could be any animal.
I get that, but it couldn't be anything. It has to be that animal. No, it has to be that animal. It's not quantum physics here.
It can become your hair, and it can become your bones.
It can't become your hair.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
A stem cell, I don't think. Whatever, that's not the point.
Anything.
It can become any part of the animal's body. Agreed.
So what does it taste? What does a stem cell taste like?
This stem cell is going to taste like meat.
Because I'm
going
to program it to taste like meat.
Exactly.
But the original stem cell didn't taste like meat.
It doesn't even matter. But that doesn't matter.
It could be anything.
But that doesn't matter. In this case, it's going to have, ultimately, the taste that's going to come out of it, and it's going to be caused by it, is the taste of meat.
Because I'm doing these things to make it. I'm programming it.
I don't know why that matters.
If it told it to become a heart or an ear or anything else, it would become that too. It would be a steak. Right, it would taste like whatever arts and ears taste like, right? So, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to program to not taste like meat, then.
I think.
You're taking it at such an early stage that basically it doesn't have the status of meat yet,
Right? He's already decided that it is meat.
Right. That's why? Where there's a different discussion about Jasmine where we will decide where we will talk about that again. And he did kind of already decide that it was meat because we ignore the fact that it's microscopic.
It has yotze because yotze 2 or whatever it is.
You mean that he's decided that it has the taste of meat?
Yes, and yeah, but like why? As
well, he actually, I mean, it seems like he hasn't. He seems like he's agreeing with you guys because he says,
if I was interested in driving kosher and interested in what's in good, the other thing be kosher. That sounds like even if it. Moreover, since the original set has been nullified, is he saying?
No, look at the last. I didn't underline it. The last part he says, of course, the possibility exists that the meat produced in a laboratory might be a bland tofu. Oh no, that's not what you're saying. You're saying he's saying if they were. He is saying this. If they were to produce meat that tasted like tofu. Right? Then everybody would agree that would be parif. Or at least he's saying, no, some would agree. Some would agree that it would be parif.
He's saying, this accordingly is going on. So the authorities has a distinction. He says,
I don't agree with you guys.
He's saying, because it is double modified to substance employed in pagan offerings and not substance modification. Other substances in the prohibited double modified, in the nature of double modified, they maintain, become nullified, provided the taste of flavor. Cannot be detected. Okay,
fine. Yeah, so. I'm unconvinced that we're gonna in the end. Anybody would say, or I mean, I get you're saying it, but that the stem cells, if we decided that they were still animal, they were still meat, right? That we're gonna ignore the fact that we're gonna try to say that okay, since they don't taste like meat, then the eventual taste of the piece of meat is not really the original taste of the stem cells, because that's what you guys are saying. No?
Yeah.
You're saying that once it becomes a stem cell, it has no taste. So then even if we end up getting a piece of meat that tastes like meat, that wasn't the original taste of the stem cells. I don't buy that.
Not once it becomes. I mean, it's just that...
You don't buy that because the stem cell grows?
I don't buy that because just the fact that something was microscopic and had no taste...
No.
I don't think that means that the eventual thing that it becomes was not the original taste.
No, there's a process, right? Everything, every cell... The stem cells are the basis for the generation of everything else in the body. Right?
I know. I get.
No. So
I get
so
this part.
They weren't ever. It's not that they didn't become. It's while for as long as they were stem cells, they could have been anything else. In which case, they didn't have the taste.
You're saying because it could have been become an eyeball. Because it could have become.
Yeah, I'm saying it's before meat.
I get that.
So it can't have the taste of meat before meat, and it's only a question of the timeline. Right, you can't say that it was destined.
But I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. I can even agree with you that stem cell has no taste. The point is though that the stem cell becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it eventually has a taste. Now, what taste does it have? Meat. Where did it come from?
Meat.
Fine. Where did it come from? Meat. What is it? It's meat. The eventual taste is going to always be meat.
On the previous day, he was talking about yotze 2. He already said that the stem cells are yotze 2. If the stem cells are yotze 2, then why? I mean, like, why are we now separating the idea of zevazog? I was saying even if zevazogaron was true, this by definition, because you can never ignore the fact that the stem cell it originates from the stem cell.
It was a sore. It was definitely a sore.
Well, I mean, he's using.
Even if it's not yotze 1, it's still a sur.
Fine, it's yotze 2, but you said but now we have zevazogaron, which should make it mutter.
If you had zevazogaron, we wouldn't be having a discussion. We're talking about when you don't have zevazogaron.
No, this is zevazogaron, but even with zevazogaron, it would be also because of marmon.
No, he's talking about, let's say you had a non-kosher medium.
Let's say you had a non-kosher animal, a non-kosher stem cell and a kosher medium.
Okay, so then you'd have zevazogaron.
But the concept of maimed would still
also it would mess up the zevazogaron.
Even though here it's yotze 2, so we're saying it's not a piece of meat. So either this is meat or it's yotze 1.
But even if it's not considered meat, it's still asur and has a taste. It's still asur and then eventually has a taste.
So then who cares about the taste? If it's yotze 2, yotze 2 isn't meat. So who cares about the taste? There is no taste. Isn't meat.
It does have a taste eventually when it becomes bigger and bigger.
It's not meat. And since it's not meat,
but it doesn't matter. It still has a taste.
It has a taste of a derivative.
No, it's the taste of itself. It has a taste of itself. It has a taste. When you taste it, when you eat it, you say, oh, I taste that thing that is the stem cell because the stem cell just divided and divided and gotten bigger and bigger. So you can't ignore it.
As long as I kind of okay, apply double alignment to that.
I think so.
Well, I tried cheating and carrying on the continuation of life, and also I got more confused.
I think after you meet with this person from Alpha Farms, you should have a meeting with Rabbi Bleich.
This is America, and he's not going to fly here.
Scholar in residence.
Probably come once in a while.
You don't know where.
So let's show up. So the continuation of our life.
Yeah, so then he says.
What are you saying that?
He's, which part?
Well, a phone call conversation with our mother.
Pungent substance is the time of either use or it does not become known for such something. The original stem cells are not. So he's saying, okay, so. He's saying it will be power of.
He's way ahead.
No, that's only if it doesn't taste like meat.
But I think he's saying it does taste like meat. Kosher isn't a kosher animal.
No, he's saying, you're right. If it tastes like meat.
With kosher medium, it's definitely kosher. However, it's paro. But you can't eat it with milk.
The resultant meat would be paro as well. Consider it to be neutral. That is so because meat becomes neutralized in a mixture of other foods 60 times greater. That is, however, only because of the presumption that the natural taste of a food product cannot be detected when mixed into a quantity of different substances 60 times greater. However, the taste of pungent substances, the tama avida, used for the very purpose of contributing a distinctive flavor, like this meat, does not become nullified. Under such circumstances, the original stem cells would not be nullified, and the resultant product could not be consumed together.
But you can't eat it with dairy. And he's using my method too.
It's parv, but you couldn't eat it with
dairy?
That's
what he said. Since the original seven now for the result of parv as well.
I think that was a havamina.
That's the havamina?
I think so.
I don't know. This is hard English.
Any English is your native tongue.
No, there's American English, there's Canadian English, South African English,
but
Australian English. Irish English.
No, yeah, I think it's. I think it's. I think that's the Havamina.
But if you make it bland, it's only artificially tasted.
It would mean that those. Yeah.
So also, we see. He's saying here it is bottle, even though it tastes like meat. It's bottle.
Bottle.
If it did taste like meat, it would not be bottle.
No, but he's saying no.
That's his point.
No, but why is it not bottle? But only because of the time of it, not because of my meat.
Why is it not bottle? Because it tastes like meat.
But why didn't you just, because the time of it, but not because of the dog and my meat. Or because it's hetzer. There's no hetzer with dog and my meat. It doesn't make a difference. That's why.
I think so.
It's just that.
Yeah, if you had the time of vida, you should really only need the time of vida. You should really only need the time of vida.
So then that should also work for awesome meat as well. You don't really.
It should be a problem.
If the time of vida works, that would also
make it a problem.
So you don't need to go into Mamet. You don't need to go into his fanciful. More complicated thing of saying this is marmot because it replicates itself. You do it because it's a tummy dog.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I did want to just run through at least one of these. This is kind of jumping ahead. This is actually just saying. Let's say we assumed that we could get away with some funny stuff. Like we could have pig meat. Stem cells, but that it worked on the basis of bitul, right? That it was okay to make these cheese. It's okay to eat it, right? But that it's okay to eat it only because it's batel. Now, normally with things like this, we don't do that.
Yeah. We have batel b'sheshem only if it's by accident.
Exactly.
I can't deliberately put in.
Exactly. You don't do bitul l'chatchila, right? This is
how
a big question.
How do we resolve this? Because it's so small.
What?
Stem cells are so small.
However you pick, whether it's this because the stem cells are small, whether it's because of a goring, whether because.
No, I'm saying so you don't even need to get onto that.
But let's say we were trying to rely on bittel, and somebody said, okay, once it's bittel, and then we're allowed to eat it. So is that totally true? Do we normally rely on that? Like, can you buy a product that you know There is non-kosher ingredients in the product, but it's such a minuscule amount. Do we do that?
No.
Is the OU going to give a kashrus? Is the Rabbanut going to say, okay, this thing is kosher, even though it contains non-kosher ingredients, but you know what? It's batos, so it's fine.
No.
Well, why not? And I didn't do it. You didn't do it. Somebody else did it. Is there any question that it's kosher? From a technical perspective?
Not,
in other words, somebody put something on the market that contains pig. Why does it contain pig? I don't know. Who cares? They wanted to add some vitamin or something like that. I don't know. That's the reason why it's in there. Or a fish, you know, a non-kosher fish they put in something. Do I care that it's in there? No. Does it add anything to the taste? No.
Isn't that the question with gelatin? You're putting tiny amounts inside, but it's to have a specific function. When you put gelatin inside a candy, for example, or whatever, right? So you're doing it to have the impact of the gelatin to make something chewy.
Yeah.
But it's a tiny amount.
Good. So right? if so, why don't so, we why don't we buy those things?
Isn't that also the question with scotch that's aged in a wine cask that they might?
There you taste it. That's the question, right? That's what Rav Shechter writes about sherry casks. That's if you taste it, then of course it's going to be a problem. Here we're talking about a case where you don't taste it at all. So here's just a general rule. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Ein mevat an isur lechatchila, va'afilu nafal atoch heter she'ein bo shir levatlo, ein mosifin alav heter kedei levatlo." We don't mevatel isur lechatchila. In other words, let's say this is just a standard case. You're in your kitchen, right? And you're cooking up your soup for Shabbos, and a little bit of milk fell into the pot. You're in trouble now, right?
No, if it's
you're in trouble.
It fell in by accident.
But it fell in by accident. So now, what do you do though? Now, and let's say it was not batel b'shishim. It's not batel b'shishim. What are your options now? Well, one really good option is add more water to it, or add more heter to it, right? And then you can cancel out the milk. Are you allowed to do that? That's what the Shulchan Aruch talks about right here. Afilu nafal atoch heter she'ein bo shir levatlo, ein mosifin alav heter kedei levatlo. You're not allowed to do that. What happens if you do that though? Yeah, your wife is coming home in 5 minutes. You just realize that it just happened. You don't want her to yell at you because she's gonna have to start the whole thing again. So you quickly do it, and it's easier to apologize than to ask permission, right? So are you allowed to do that? What happens? Avaru bitlo oshariba alav im b'shogeg mutar. If you did it by accident, if you realized afterwards, you were making it, and then you realized afterwards that milk had spilled in there in the middle, and then I added more, so now everything is fine, and I didn't realize that in between the milk had entered, then that's fine, mutar. But im b'meiz, if you did it on purpose, asur l'mevatel atzmo im hushalo, you're not allowed to eat it. V'chein l'mishen itpatal b'shvilo, and you know what, your family is not allowed to eat it either. It's asur to the person who made it, and it's asur for the person for whom it was made. And you're not allowed to sell it to another Jew, either. Now, here's the thing.
You can make it a very simple statement. Asur, period.
But here's the thing, Dad. What happens if the person making the product is not Jewish? What happens if the Coca-Cola factory is in New York? It's a bunch of non-Jews that are working on the Coca-Cola factory, and they decide that they want to put something non-kosher in there, but they didn't ask anybody because they don't care. So they put a little bit in, but you know what? They don't care how much is in there. It happens to be this batel, and now they wanted to sell it to Jews. Now, were they mevatel it for the Jews? No. I mean, did they sell it to me? Yes. Were they thinking of me when they did it?
Absolutely.
No. So what's the deal? That's where things get much, much more complicated. The Taz says, I'm just reading the underlines, Aval im lo yadam yimenu sharilei, darayu kishogig, ubamakom ha'asur lo, asur gam ken levnei beito. That's where he says that it's going to be asur for your whole family. And Rabbi Kiva Eger says, im bitel al hastam lemishir teliknot, darayu kemoshe nasa bishvilam biyichud, v'asur lekulam. Daf mishin is batal avur lo yadam yitza. He expands it, and he says it's asur to anybody you're even going to sell it to. If you do it, it's asur to everybody. Rabbi Kiva Eger takes a very macro position.
I don't understand why we need all these pratim. We can just say, as a general rule, it's asur. It's asur to you. It's asur to the person who is going to eat it. It's asur.
Here's the key, though.
Somebody you're going to sell it to. It's asur.
But what happens if there's a non-Jewish company that's making these kinds of meats, and all the ingredients that they're using are kosher except for the actual stem cell? And let's say we thought that, okay, but that's fine because it's batel in the end of the day. Can we get a certification on that or not? Can they sell it? Can you go into business doing that? Can you do it? Let's say I wanted to start this and I said I'm going to use pig instead of cow. If we're assuming bittel, it would seem no, you're not allowed to do this. Rav Tzvi Reisman, everything we've been reading so far is from Rabbi Bleich, that's in the English. Rabbi Tzvi Reisman wrote in Truman, that's those books that we have over here. Rav Tzvi Reisman is a rabbi in Los Angeles. He's a big rabbi, he's a very wealthy man, and he writes a lot of halacha. Rav Tzvi Reisman, I'm thinking of the wrong one. Rav Tzvi Reisman is the one who gives shirim on Navi.
Is he in
Brooklyn? He's the one who lives in Brooklyn.
I'm
thinking of someone else. Right, so Rav Tzvi Reisman lives in Brooklyn, he gives shirim on Navi, and he also writes many halachas for him. He wrote many halachic articles, and he says, Rav Tzvi Reisman, matir basar miturbat. Miturbat is lab grown. No, I think that's... I'm confused now.
Roskosvi is California.
Yes, that's why I'm confused. Which one this is? I'm now confused. Which one is? It might be the Los Angeles one. Or it might be the Brooklyn one. I'm not actually sure. Anyways, he says Matir b'shar basar miturbat bein heter bein yeter mishum shahata harishoni mitchalek umitrabe umitbatel berov hatayim achadashim. I'm sorry. Actually, you know what? This is actually of Yaakov Ariel writing, responding to Rav Reisman. Reisman writes something. Rav Yaakov Ariel, who's the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan right now, and the head of Machon HaTorah V'Aretz. So he's responding. He thinks Rav Reisman is wrong. Rav Reisman wants to say that it's completely mutar. And he says because it's batel, and that Rav Reisman writes even more that there's no iser bittel lachatchila at all, because if it was made in Chutz La'aretz by non-Jews for non-Jews, then it's okay for Jews to buy it. No problem. Made by non-Jews, for non-Jews, and we happen to want to buy it. What's the problem? They're not being mevatelit for us, so what's the problem? That's what Rav Reisman wants to say. So, and of course, the Ritbaz, who also says this, Ritbaz says, Asur leknot migoy isur shehitarev barov heter mishum she'etzam hakniyah mimenu nachshevet labitel lezachatchila. But there are those who are matir, and he wants to be matir. So he writes, jumping down. Okay, so Rav Yaakov Ariel doesn't buy the whole thing because he doesn't think there's any bittel over here. So he doesn't think we can even go on to that. But yeah, that is part of the issue as well. All right, we're going to stop there tonight. I think it's enough for tonight. Next time maybe we'll talk about Jell-O, and then finally I think we'll look at a couple of the Israeli poskim that have already decided, have already ruled on this. And then I would like at some point to just think of this as a philosophical issue from two perspectives. One that Daniel brought up already, whether or not there's an issue of, you know, quote-unquote playing God, whether or not this kind of genetic engineering is really appropriate or not. And the second, whether or not vegetarianism as an ideal is something that we should be striving for, and whether this is really vegetarianism at all, whether it's something that's an appropriate ideal for a religious Jew. So I'd like to talk about that as well.
Yisrael Reisman.
What?
Rabbi
Yisrael Reisman is the Brooklyn-based one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is Rabbi Reisman is the Los Angeles one, who backs a ton of Torah institutions both here and in Eretz and Chutz La'aretz.
And it was the ship of Theseus.
Theseus. But from what story, though? Isn't it in Jason and the Argonauts?
King of Athens, or one of the founders of Athens at some stage, and he had lots of battles in a boat.
Right, so Theseus' ship.
So it becomes later on a thought experiment. Plato discusses it and all sorts of others. But it's basically, let's say you kept it in a museum to show everybody the boat that he sailed in, and every time one piece got rotten, you...
Replaced it.
Right.
Is it still
at what point is it no longer the ship of Theseus?
Yeah. Right. I took a class trip once to the Museum of Natural History, and we looked at a dinosaur skeleton, and there was somebody there working on it.
Right.
And we asked her, what is this from?
It's not the real dinosaur, is that?
She actually said to us, point blank, about 30% of this is real dinosaur bone. The rest is something we created to make it... Right. To complete the skeleton.
So have you been in the natural history?
It's not really a dinosaur skeleton that you're looking at.
So the Natural History Museum in England starts with a massive with Dippy, the Diplodocus, or whatever else inside. And eventually they realize that this animal hasn't been found millions of years.
is none of it is authentic. It's all a copy of something.
Yeah, they throw a bunch of drinks away and put your air conditioning in your tank.
So now they've got a real blue whale in there hanging from the thing, which is the biggest animal in the